Hello, everyone. This is Michelle Spencer, Senior Trainer with Bracewell Giuliani, and also the ILTA User Support Services Peer Group Vice President. Say that 10 times fast. We are here today to record a podcast called Trends in Training, and I have with me members of the User Support Services Steering Committee. I'd like to start by letting each of them introduce themselves, and then we'll get into our five topics.
Hello, everyone. My name is Asima Mackey, and I am a records and information management trainer slash analyst, and I work for PennWest Petroleum Limited here in Calgary, Alberta.
Hello, my name is Jan Huber. I'm the professional development manager with Fakery, Baker, and Daniels.
Hello, my name is Marietta Terrell. I'm with Lloyd Gosling, and I am the trainer and help desk specialist here at the firm in Austin, Texas.
Hi, my name is Marcia Kuhn. I'm the training and computer user support specialist at Downs Rackham Martin in Vermont.
Welcome, everyone, and thanks for sharing your thoughts with the group. So we're going to start out with our first topic, and that is, what does a modern trainer look like? So, Asima, you want to lead us off?
Sure. Wow. Well, training certainly. The word trainer has certainly, the scope of that word has expanded over the last several years. Trainer before now, the role of the trainer can take on so many different facets and responsibilities. Number one, our role itself. You know, it's not strict classroom instructor-led training delivery, but we can be involved in so much more into our information technology and other projects. For example, with myself, I am in the records and information management area, and I'm supporting information governance projects, and eDocs is our tool of choice. other roles that I have seen over the past are that, we're also involved in business analysis work. We could be involved in change management duties. There was a wonderful session last year at the conference that specifically dealt with this topic on the evolving role of the trainer. And in that particular session, we saw trainers that were involved as project managers, as quality assurance or quality control capacities, and others as well. So there is a wide variety of areas that we can now add our expertise to. One of the things that I've noticed in the past, and that's been a very positive step for me, is that training has no longer sort of come at the end of the project as a last minute sort of, thought. What I've seen now is that that user experience that we have is a great tool to be able to bring the expertise up to the front when we're designing applications and other initiatives as well.
So, what I see that being is kind of trainers being helping with change management.
Change management, and then also designing the user interface.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we know what people are, how they work, or what are some of their challenges, how are the different roles, using technology, and then we can help in the design of new applications, for example.
Beta testing, I know we do a lot of that. What about the rest of the group? What kinds of things what other roles have you guys played?
Being a counselor and people asking advice, what do I do with this email when they really don't have a paralegal or attorney to ask, say a secretary might ask me that. Do I really respond to this, or how do I treat this, where do I put it? It's really quite interesting. As trainers and help desk people, we're asked a lot to counsel them on ideas for their work.
We're kind of that main source of information because
yes,
we know the applications and the workflows. What about the rest of the group?
This is Jan, and one of the changes I've seen in a modern trainer is actually happening to me, and I have transitioned from being totally technology-driven training to also the non-technical, soft skills, as we like to call them, and also increasingly getting to that attorney population. So I think I see a lot of transitioning maybe from our traditional role as a technology training group to more of the professional development group. So that's been a trend I've noticed.
And one that I've observed also is kind of a business analyst, seeing people being embedded with practice groups and actually working with the practice group to leverage technology better. I've always referred to myself as a technology translator, and I think that role is one that we're seeing too. How about you, Marcia?
Well, certainly things have changed a lot in the last 16 years. I remember when I first started, we would buy, you know, training manuals, and now I create just about all our training documentation. So you need to become an instructional designer. We've also implemented e-learning tutorials. So that has meant learning those applications such as Adobe Captivate and learning also about instructional design. And then also managing the content on the internet, all the learning resources available. So those
true,
are some
true.
Additional roles that have been added to my job as a trainer.
Many, many more hats.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of leads us into our next topic, which is performance support. And I wanted to give everyone just a definition of what performance support is to kind of kick off the discussion. It provides just-in-time, just-enough training, information, tools, and help for users of a product or work environment to enable optimum performance when and where needed, thereby enhancing the performance of the overall business. So it's distinguished from online help and training in that way. And I know, Marcia, this is a topic that you've delved into quite a bit.
Right. I knew that, you know, people would come to training classes and, you know, in the training classes, everything looked very easy to them. And they were going to go back to their workstation or their office and be able to perform all the tasks that I had just gone over with them. But it seemed that once they hit their workstation or their office, all that knowledge seemed to go away.
Mm-hmm.
So performance support became a topic that I was interested in because training really happens, or learning, I should say, really happens on the job. Studies have shown, from what I have read, that only about 20% of what people need to know to complete their job is learned in the classroom. So I was really interested in how can we provide that support to our users so that when they need to do that table of authorities with, you know, the software that they use once or twice a year, how can I do this now? So I attended a workshop offered by Bob Mosier, Performance Support. He has started a whole company that deals strictly with performance support, and they have conferences now. He writes a lot for CLO Magazine and Elliot Massey's newsletters on performance support. And, you know, it's providing, as you said, Michelle, that just-in-time training. So some of the things that we implemented was that for all new staff, that once they have the training, the initial onboard training, I still do follow-up training with them for 30 minutes a day until they really feel confident in all the applications that we use. So instead of being training like 2 days when they first start or the first 3 days, we make it an ongoing training event, so it expands maybe 2 or 3 weeks. So it's not all the training at one time because it just overwhelmed the users. Also, they know that they can call me at any time. Even though we have 5 offices, I can remote into any of their computers and answer any questions that they have regarding the technology that we use.
So it's basically taking it out of the classroom and taking it to the desk. And
absolutely.
I actually went out to Wikipedia, and I found it interesting that there's not a specific page on performance support, but there was one on electronic performance support systems. And one of the things it said was that there will become a distinction between, or that the distinction between learning and work will disappear, mm-hmm. and that the trend is toward integrating training with on-the-job activities, and that's mm-hmm. exactly what you guys are doing. So training as a distinct function is going to kind of be blurred a little bit. So what about the rest of you folks? Have you delved into performance support at all?
This is Jan, and one of the trends that I'm kind of watching is the help desk. A lot of firms are using Link, a lot of instant messaging, and perhaps seeing the help desk do a chat session where it's instead of waiting in a queue to get to a person on the phone, maybe you have this option to do chat. And again, it's one of those social medias that's, you know, leaking into the business world, but a lot of people are starting to go down that road. So that's kind of an interesting trend.
Well, and with Link, too, you can leverage desktop sharing. So
right.
I definitely see it going that way. I think it's going to be interesting to see how firms manage that because, you know, that's kind of outside of our ticket tracking systems and traditional things that we've done. How about you, Marita or Asima, anything that you guys have done on performance support?
We really want to focus on an individual's time. And that's critical. So you want to, you know, something about performance support is that you are able to provide specific, targeted, focused training and, you know, leverage people's time effectively.
Definitely, definitely. How about you, Marita?
I think it ties in the performance support into the next topic that we were going to talk about, ways to support informal learning, because informal learning is the unofficial, unscheduled, impromptu way most people learn to do their jobs, by doing something when they have a question, hey, today I need to do a table of authorities, how do I do it? That's the best time to teach them how, because they're going to remember it then. They're not going to remember it in a five-day training, new hire training period. So we have to be on hand so they can do that and have items like Marcia and Jan were saying, on items available, like a little video or done by Captivate, or be available through instant messaging or Link or reaching out to people's desk or walking around the office and, hey, can you stop and show me this right now?
So kind of basically providing self-study resources. And then some other things that I've heard people talk about with regard to informal learning are kind of communities of practice or expert directories. Anyone doing anything like that at their firm?
You mean like peer-to-peer teaching?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I have that sometimes here because they'll listen to an attorney. My fellow attorney is teaching this. Sure, I'll come.
Yeah. This is Jan again, and I'll go ahead. This is Jan. And one of the companies I worked for prior to this law firm, we actually had people interested in becoming certified in the Microsoft Office User Specialist and designation and certification. And once they got that, then we posted kind of a little sticker by their name on the phone list so that people knew that they were experts in those topics, whether that be PowerPoint or Word or any of the programs of Office. And they got some recognition out of that, and you know, other people knew that I don't have to always call the help desk. I can go to some other, you know, peer that has a degree, so to speak, or a certification that they'll know what I'm talking about too.
So for those firms that happen to have SharePoint, one of the things that you can put as part of your profile in SharePoint are areas of expertise. And I found it interesting that our firm initially was like, oh, well, do we want people declaring they're experts in certain things? Whereas I think in corporate America versus law firms, they are quite a ways ahead of us on that. Anyone else doing things along those lines to support informal learning?
This is Asima. Similar. In that peer-to-peer learning, what I had done at my last firm was engaged other subject matter experts, for example, our document processing supervisor. So they would, you know, run through, it's impossible to run through everything during new hire training. There's just so much, and drinking from the proverbial water hose is just not an, you know, an option anymore. So there was a four-week follow-up. So once we had onboarded a new person, and for 4 weeks afterwards, they would have sessions with our document processing supervisor, and I would, you know, train the documents word processing supervisor and give her a script and give her a checklist. So I would give her a toolkit. And her role was not as a trainer per se, but just as that go-to person or just as a follow-up or mentor to a new hire. And if there were any areas which needed to be visited again, styles or any tasks, then they would refer them back to one of us trainers and we would train them. But this way we could ensure that there was some follow-up for 4 weeks post new hire.
Great, great. And
this
I think
is Jan again, and I have one more thing to add that I think is very informal and kind of fun, but just in your newsletters that you're putting out or your how you're marketing your training, we just started adding something, you know, like called Just for Fun. And what we try to do is hide learning, and we have it so that we describe a scenario and then ask for people to reply back with the best alternative to respond to that scenario, and then we offer a little prize. So it's based kind of on a tip and tricks that's being posted on our intranet page, but we're not sure that people are reading those tips and tricks. So we just kind of put it in the newsletter to leverage that tip and kind of hide it as a learning event. So you can have fun with your learning.
That is a great way to get informal learning in there through those little inroads.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of segues us into kind of where we're going next with supporting learning in non-traditional ways, and that would be mobile learning or M-learning. So, Jean,
yes.
Did you want to lead us off on that?
I do. I mobile learning has been on my horizon for quite a while, just kind of watching where will this go, what is it really, you know, what's the definition of M-learning, and was early on sent one of our trainers to a conference on that just to find out what does that mean and what could we do with that. And we were very early adopters in the training department here of iPads and anticipating our partners getting those iPads and being, you know, wanting to come to us for training. So I think there's a lot of incentive. The millennials are coming on. It's the YouTube generation, I like to call them. The learners are on the go more than they were. They don't want to come to an instructor-led training. We're doing more webinar, more electronic training, delivered electronically. So if you go that route, you're almost ready then for the next step that, hey, I've got this electronic device. Why can't I get to your training electronically? It's already electronic in some format. But there's a lot of difference between a webinar recording and, you know, watching something or something even interactive that is built for the mobile devices. And the problem being that you just have so many different platforms, that there's not just one platform that you would, you know, need. I think most of the law firms lately have gone to a BYOD policy where you've got every kind of device that anybody wants to bring in. So that's kind of a hard thing to think about, but I do see some ways that would be good. An attorney might be on a plane trip that's a two-hour plane trip someplace, and they could get CLE on that. So I can understand the benefit of that. There's just reasons that here I'm stuck someplace in a client's office and I don't know how to connect to something to my OWA. So you could have something that they can read your instructions on their mobile device. So those are some of the things that we've been looking at, is how can we leverage that content that we already have, but then put it in an electronic format that can display correctly, let alone build something interactive where it's truly an online course.
So I know we actually did M-learning before we ever called it that with some of our laptops, in that the images had some help resources always right there on the desktop. And so, you know, I think one of the big fears with mobile learning is, you know, how do I kind of jump in? Well, that's
mm-hmm.
one easy way to do it. I was just on a webinar yesterday on mobile learning, And a lot of folks were talking about security, and we can't open up our learning management systems or leverage our internal materials because of security. And they were complaining about IT. Well, I think the advantage that ILTA members have is that we are IT. And so we can think about some ways to do that. You know, can maybe it's an extranet. Maybe you do open up your learning management system and allow access to that. Or maybe you have a specific SharePoint site that folks can go to. Anybody else have some thoughts on mobile learning, or has your firm kind of dipped a toe in that pond?
This is Moretta. Because we're a one-office firm and we don't have much mobility in our attorneys, and we don't have SharePoint, we're a small firm, so how do I approach that? And so one way I've done that is post, instead of on our intranet, because people don't seem to go there quite yet, we haven't gone that far, is post a link on their desktop. I can download it to the desktop to various training PowerPoints that I've set up or gotten from some point. And all of a sudden on the desktop, they see this little icon saying, oh, Word 2010, you know, Table of Authorities training. And they can open it up and go, oh, this is cool. And I've had people say, oh, that was neat. I had time to look at that, and that really helped. So that's my little approach to mobile learning.
You know, and I think we do the best with what we have, and that's a great example of doing that. Anybody else doing anything with mobile learning or thinking about it?
Michelle, I might this is Jan again. I might just suggest that ILTA is offering a webinar on Thursday, April 3rd, about how to safely edit documents on the iPad and the latest risks with the latest app. So if there's somebody thinking about mobile learning, and part of the use of mobile technology is what are you doing with the documents that you have? So you might want to, we'll publish that tip
we'll
attend that webinar.
We will publish that to the e-group, so be looking for that. Hopefully you're listening to this podcast before that occurs. If not, you can always catch the recording of it after the fact. So that brings us into our next kind of pie in the sky topic, which is gamification. And this is one that I feel particularly strongly about because I'm a gamer, and it really frustrates me when I see trainers thinking of gamification as playing games, because that's not what gamification is at all. It is actually using game thinking and game mechanics in non-game context, and you do that to engage your users in whatever the topic is. So what gamification is, and the game mechanics that we're talking about, are measurements. So using the measurements and the motivation, it's rewards and recognition. So things like badges and leaderboards, and that also ties into reputation. So when you have leaderboards and things like that, then you have people becoming experts at things. And so it's not just, hey, let me throw a game out there. It's actually leveraging those game mechanics. And so there's two different ways to kind of game things. There is gamified learning, which is adding game elements to your traditional learning. So that's where you would do badges and leaderboards and characters. And then there's actually game-based learning, where the course is designed as a game experience. And there's a story, and there's gameplay and competition. Increasing complexity, that's another thing, and challenges and things like that. So I think we've got a long way to go with this. A lot of heavy-duty gamification would require tools that I don't think a lot of us have yet, but there are some ways we can put these elements into our training. Is anyone else exploring gamification, or have you done anything with badges, leaderboards, things like that?
This is Miranda. It just helped for you to have explained what you just did as to what gamification really is, because I do believe a lot of us said, oh, let me find a PowerPoint that's a Jeopardy game, and that's not what you're talking about at all. So that really helped a lot to explain that so we can use it better.
I know, you know, in the legal environment, I have heard a lot of firms having certificates and things like that, and having, you know, a bronze, silver, or gold level. So that is gamification. So I think, you know, some of us have been doing it for quite some time without even realizing that, oh, this is this new gamification thing that we're hearing about.
Exactly.
Anyone else doing anything with gamification?
This is Jan, and I can't recall the name of the add-in that Office had, oh, a couple of versions ago, and I don't know if anybody on the phone can recall it, but you could add it on, and it would track your actions, and you earned points by that.
Ribbon Hero.
Ribbon Hero.
Yeah.
That's what it was. So
I
think that's what I thought of when you started, you know, we thought about pushing that out as you rolled out the new version, that this might help you be a little competitive and knowing something more than your other person. But, yeah, it was called Ribbon Hero. It's probably not available anymore, but I do remember that kind of, you know, points earned based upon your learning.
Actually, Jan, it is available, Ribbon Hero 2 for Office 2010. Yes, it is.
Oh, my gosh. Well, there you go. It's already for you.
I was a big fan of Ribbon Hero and would have loved to have gotten it pushed out here, but I think we were a little bit ahead of the curve with our Office 2010 rollout, and it was like, I don't know if we want to do that. And you could publish results out to Facebook, and I think people were really hesitant about that. Maybe now that might be different because we're 3 years later from when we did our rollout. But I think at the time, it was maybe a little ahead of its time, but that's a great example of gamification and also performance support because it was embedded in the application. Anyone else exploring gamification?
This is Miranda, and part of the performance support, I don't know if people know about it, but there is from Microsoft Office Labs, something free that you can download called Search Ribbons for Excel, PowerPoint, and Word. And it's like, I can't call the help desk right now, but let me click on that ribbon search commands, and you start typing a word, and the commands show up depending on what you want and show you where it is, and it does it for you, or you can add it to your quick access toolbar. It's really a wonderful thing, and people here now demand it on their new computers.
So one thing that we will do as part of this podcast recording, when we post it up, we'll post up some resources for folks for some of these topics, since we're talking about kind of some trending topics. So I want to thank all of you for participating and sharing your thoughts and your expertise today. And as Randy Mays always says, go tell a friend about ILTA.